really important that we be reminded from time to time of what our purpose as a church is. There are lots of things that are going on in all of our lives and lots of things that we as a church encounter. And so we need to be reminded of what our purpose and goal is, and at least for the Woodland Oaks Church of Christ, we have two primary focuses. One is to take the gospel to a lost world, and the other is stated in Ephesians chapter 4, verse 12, and a few verses that follow, and that is to equip God's people for the work of ministry. And that's what our assemblies are basically for and about. And it says when God's people are busy ministering, there are going to be three results. The body is going to be built up. We will have unity. And we'll quit acting like babies. We'll grow up. And so it is that this series of lessons that we're involved in right now, the fundamentals of Christian ministry, we're talking about our ministry. Because if our goal is to equip God's people for the work of serving or ministry, then we need to do some talking about that. We have divided the idea of spiritual gifts into three categories: gifted men, temporary sign gifts, and permanent edifying gifts. And we looked at the beginning at the gifted men. We are into the section of temporary sign gifts. And in our last two lessons, we talked about miracles. And we noted that the primary function of the gift of miracles is the ability to cast out demons and control demons. We often use the term miracle, and rightly so, to denote miracles of nature. For instance, calming the sea or feeding the 5,000 by multiplying the bread and the fish. And while that certainly is a miracle, it is not the gift of miracles. And we looked at that last time. We have, by the way, no record of any apostle performing any of the miracles dealing with nature. Have you ever thought about that? Therefore, the gift of miracles was evidently associated primarily with exercising control over the demons, and the apostles had that gift. There are three verses in 1 Corinthians chapter 12 that mention the gift of healing, and that's what we're going to be dealing with this morning. And I have to tell you, I'm a little bit out of sorts this morning because while this particular lesson, there is no reason for most people that this should be very emotional. I woke up at 3:15 this morning and wasn't able to go back to sleep because of this lesson. And it's a very personal thing because there are some people that I'm very closely associated with who teach some things about the gift of healing that are very distressing to me. And I just was not able, since I had been studying that and it was on my mind, I wasn't able to get away from it, and so I've been awake a long time this morning. And so this lesson is has a special import to me, and I hope that maybe someday those that I'm concerned about in regard to this may be able to hear this lesson. In 1 Corinthians chapter 12, verse 9, verse 28, and verse 30, it mentions the gift of healing. And that's what we're going to be looking at morning. It's, I guess I would say, somewhat controversial, even though I don't consider it to be controversial, but it certainly is a source of much concern and interest because it's the number one felt human need all over the world, is human suffering and disease. And so this won't be an attack. This will be kind. Obviously, there are many who believe in miraculous healing today. All you have to do is turn on your radio or your TV and you see it abundantly. I do believe, let me state at the very outset, that God heals today in response to prayer. But I want to make a distinction in healing by God and the gift of healing as one of the gifts that was given. To say that God heals today is not the same thing as saying that God gives a human the miraculous gift of healing. So let's look at the gift of healing. Disease is the most tragic of human physical conditions. Every society of every age has searched for cures for illness and suffering, from witch doctors to today's modern sophisticated hospitals and medical procedures. And I have to confess, if I had the choice of having any of the gifts of the Holy Spirit beyond what the Lord has given me, I would want it to be the gift of healing. Just a personal thing, because like you, I've sat helplessly at someone's bedside or in an emergency room if someone is suffering from a disease, dying from a disease, or having been involved in a terrible accident, and it just, you feel so absolutely helpless in the face of such suffering. And I've imagined what it would be like to have that gift. How many billions of dollars are spent annually on cancer and AIDS and heart disease and so forth? And I thought, you know, if I had that gift, you'd be the most loved person in the world, wouldn't you? If we had the gift of healing, everyone would respond to the gospel and be saved, wouldn't they? Well, Jesus had that gift. The apostles had that gift. It's been said that in the 3 years of Jesus' ministry, public ministry, he banished disease from Palestine. And everybody was happy, right? When Jesus was being condemned, the people that he had healed and all their grateful families rose up in arms to stop the crucifixion, right? No, they said, crucify him. Let his blood be upon us and our children. When the Apostle Paul wrote his last epistle in 2 Timothy, he said, all my friends are here to comfort me in jail because of all the good things I've done for them, right? That's not what he said. He said, everyone's forsaken me. In 2 Timothy 4:16. The apostles in Acts chapter 5 healed, quote, all the sick from the towns around Jerusalem. And for their efforts, they were thrown in jail and flogged. And that causes me to stop and think and realize that miracles never saved a single soul. They authenticated the message, but the truth is most folks don't like the message. Faith does not come from being healed. Faith comes by hearing a spoken message. And the message that's heard is from the Word of God. Miracles don't save you. You're saved only by God's Word. So, if our purpose for desiring the gift of miracles and healings and tongues is that we believe that these will save people, then we're naive and we lack understanding of the purpose for miracles. Friends, we have in our possession and access to the only thing that will save people, and that is the gospel. And there is nothing else that will save people. And if you were able to work all the miracles in the world, it wouldn't save a single soul. The gospel is God's power unto salvation, and there is no other power. Well, what about modern-day healers? Historically, at least religiously, the oldest claims for healing come from the Roman Catholic Church. They have claimed to be able to heal people with bones from John the Baptist and bones of Peter and relics of the cross. They've claimed to heal at shrines where Mary appeared. They've claimed to heal with vials of Mary's breast milk. They have claimed many healings at the shrine of Lourdes, France. And also, there are Oriental psychic healers who claim to be able to do bloodless surgery using only their hands as scalpels. There are African and Aboriginal witch doctors who use potions and spells and hexes. There are the occultists who use black magic and voodoo. Mary Baker Eddy, the founder of the Christian Science cult, claims to heal through telepathy. And in more modern times, you can turn on your television. I assume you can still watch people like Benny Hinn. My question, and a question that I think begs to be answered honestly to modern healers and about modern healers is their ministry centered around the message or around the healing? Can you be honest and answer that? When they get up, is it about the healing or is it about the message? Why do people go to such healers? And the answer is because people get desperate when we get sick. And people that are otherwise clear-minded, intelligence-balanced people become irrational when it comes to me being sick. In Job chapter 2, verse 4, Job said, "Skin for skin, yea, all that a man hath," or at least Satan said this to the Lord, "skin for skin, yea, all that a man has, he'll give for his life." He knew what he was talking about, didn't he? Let me read you an observation from a medical doctor by the name of William Nolan in a book entitled Healing, A Doctor in Search of a Miracle. In your mind, you must make a distinction between a functional disease and an organic disease. A functional disease is diagnosed when a perfectly good organ does not function properly. An organic disease is diagnosed when the organ is organically destroyed, maimed, or crippled. The functional disease has only a symptom without a reality. An organic disease has a reality and a symptom. And you will find that in all the cases of so-called healers, the only types of healings they ever accomplish are functional, never organic. They are dealing only with the symptoms. Nolan says, "Doctors use hypnosis or suggestions frequently. When I give a patient a pill or shot, I make a point of saying, 'This medicine should make you better in 24 or 48 hours. This medicine always works very well.' I know that in some cases, I'm going to get better results if I suggest to the patient that the medicine will work than if I would have said, 'Well, I don't know about this medicine. Sometimes it works pretty well. Sometimes it's not so hot. We'll give it a shot and try for the best.'" There's a lot of power in positive thinking, he continues, particularly where functional disorders are concerned. He continues, "Search the literature as I have, and you will find no documented cures by healers of gallstones, heart disease, cancer, or any other serious organic disease. Certainly, you'll find patients temporarily relieved of their upset stomachs, their chest pains, their breathing problems, and you will find healers and believers who will interpret this interruption of symptoms as evidence that the disease is cured. But when you track the patient down later and find out what happened, you will always find the cure to have been purely symptomatic and transient. The underlying disease remains." That's excerpts from his book, Healing, A Doctor in Search of a Miracle, pages 250 to 260. Let's compare what we see today with what we see in Jesus' healing and the healing of the first century. In order to provide a basis for us to compare what we're seeing today with what we saw in the New Testament, first of all, Jesus healed with a word or a touch. With a word in Matthew chapter 8, verse 5 through 13, the centurion's servant, from a distance, Jesus said to the centurion after he had come and begged for him to come, "Go, and it will be done just as you believe it would." And then when he arrived at home, he found out that his servant had been healed at the exact time that Jesus had spoken a word from a distance. He didn't even have to be present. And that was the point that the centurion made, wasn't it? He said, "I'm a man under authority. I know what it is to have authority and say to somebody, 'Go or come,' and he does that. And the implication was, I know that all you have to do is speak a word, and it will obey you." And Jesus said, "I've not seen faith like this anywhere in Israel. Go, and it will be done just as you believed it would." He got home, and his servant was healed. With a touch, in Matthew chapter 5, verse 25 through 34, the woman with the issue of blood, and in this case, it was her touch, wasn't it? That she came up behind him in a crowd and reached out and touched the hem of his garment, and she was instantly healed. There are other occasions where Jesus touched someone and instantly they were healed. There were no theatrics. There was no drama. There was no putting your head on somebody's hand and pushing them down and somebody behind them to catch them, as seems to be the prominent MO today. And so, as we look at the pattern of Jesus' healing, he healed with a word or with a touch. He also healed instantaneously. In Mark chapter 5, verse 29, immediately her bleeding stopped. In Luke 17, 14, the lepers were healed instantly. It says, as they went on their way, they were healed. John 9, 7, the blind man who washed his eyes in the pool of Siloam came home seeing. There was none of this, you know, since the Lord healed me, I've been getting progressively better every day. There wasn't any of that. The healing was instantaneous. For all the sake of integrity, with one exception. And to be real honest with you, an exception I don't completely understand. In Mark chapter 8, verse 24, whenever the man was blind and Jesus touched him, and he says he saw men walking like trees. You remember that incident? But within a few moments before the man left Jesus' presence, he was completely healed. He did not leave Jesus' presence without being completely healed. Healing was on the spot. And the point is, if it had not been, if it had been a gradual process, it would have been worthless to demonstrate his deity. Because it wouldn't have been demonstratable. It wouldn't have been provable. There would have been many who would have said, well, it was just a natural process. He's just getting well. And so Jesus' healing was instantaneous. Even Jesus' enemies admitted regarding the healing of the blind man, we cannot deny that a notable miracle has been done, even from Jesus' own enemies. And then Jesus healed totally. Remember in Luke chapter 4, Peter's mother-in-law. And we could pick out any number of illustrations for any one of these, but just to pick one out, in Luke 4:39, he stood over her, rebuked the fever, and it left her. And immediately she arose and ministered unto them. Jesus healed everybody. In Luke chapter 4, verse 40. Now when the sun was setting, the people brought Jesus, all those who had various kind of sicknesses, and laying his hands on each one, he healed them. He didn't have to hire people to get the people together and interview those who were going to come to be healed, did he? He healed everybody. Everybody that came, regardless of what their disease was or their problem was. And then Jesus also healed organic disease. People who were crippled from birth could walk. People who were blind could see. People who were deaf and dumb could hear and speak. And these were all ailments or diseases that were visible to the eye, and you could see it instantly. You could see it whenever he reached down and picked up Malchus, the high priest's servant's ear, and put it back on his head. You could see that, couldn't you? Do you see that this is different from the kind of healings that people claim to be able to do today? And then Jesus also raised the dead. In Matthew 5:35, the synagogue ruler's 12-year-old daughter was raised. In Matthew 8, the centurion's servant. In Luke 7, the widow's son. In John 11, Lazarus. All of these were raised from the dead. Why don't some of these healers today spend some time in the funeral parlor bringing people back from the dead? And then to set all this in context one more time, as we've done from the very beginning, what was the purpose of this healing? Why did Jesus heal? In John chapter 20, verse 30 and 31, it says, "And Jesus truly did many other miraculous signs in the presence of his disciples that are not written in this book. But these are written, why? That you might believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and that by believing you might have life through his name." That's why the miracles were performed. As evidence of who Jesus was and to verify his message. Now let me briefly comment about the apostles' gift of healing. In Luke chapter 9, verse 1, it says, when Jesus had called his 12 disciples together, he gave them power and authority to drive out all demons and cure diseases. Two things. Drive out demons and cure diseases. Note, there is no record of the apostles having the ability to make food, to walk on water, to calm wind, to make a tree die, or any of those things associated with nature. They had power over Satan and demons and the gift of healing diseases. In Luke chapter 10, the Lord chose 70 and sent them ahead of him to every town or place where he was about to go. In verse 9, he instructed them, heal the sick who are there and tell them that the kingdom of God is near you. Is there anyone else that had these powers? Well, in Acts chapter 8, verse 13, you have Philip. He could perform, quote, signs and miracles. And verse 18 indicates that the miraculous gifts could be imparted by the laying on of the apostles' hands. So evidently, as the apostles and their close associates, at least as we know, Philip, could impart miraculous gifts as they established churches in their travel. And so, the Apostle Paul was able to write back to some of the churches and say, you don't lack any spiritual gift. Within those churches, gifts were assigned. Imagine the controversy of the message as it came to the Jews. You have killed your Messiah. You're no longer God's exclusive people. God is now calling out from among the nations a people peculiar to him. How in the world do you think you're ever going to get the Jewish people to believe that? What chance do you have of ever getting them to believe that message if it was just the message that was by itself? The shock of this message was so tremendous that God had to attest to its truth by miracles and healings, or people would never have believed it. And even at that, some believe, in Acts chapter 2, verse 37, now when they heard this, they were cut to their heart. Had they seen a miracle on that occasion? They had. They'd seen glossolalia. We'll pick that up next week. Tongue speaking, they'd seen that, hadn't they? It caught their attention. And then they listened to the message. It helped to impact their lives with the message. Some rejected. Acts chapter 5, verse 28. Others were furious, put the apostles in jail, and said, you filled Jerusalem with your doctrine. The result of Peter and John healing the crippled man. Apostles' pattern of healing was the same as Jesus's. They heal with a word or touch. In Acts chapter 9, Aeneas. In Acts chapter 28, the father of Publius. They healed instantaneously in Acts chapter 3. They healed totally in Acts chapter 9. They healed everybody in Acts chapter 5 and Acts chapter 29. It says they were healing everyone. They healed organic diseases in Acts chapter 3, a man who had been crippled for 40 years. They raised the dead in Acts chapter 9, verse 36. Peter raised Dorcas or Tabitha in Joppa. Now, I don't mean this in any way, and I hope this will not ever be taken in any mean-spirited way. But in order to address truth, sometimes we have to be really plain-spoken about it, don't we? We can't just dance around the issue all the time. There are many people who claim to be able to heal today, miraculously. And there are, I suppose, millions of people, at least hundreds of thousands of people, who are followers. People who believe that. And I find it incredulous that that's the case. Because of all these people, they've never truly seen one miracle. And yet, these people who claim to be able to do that, they continue to be able to function and they continue to have people who follow them. Many, many people. Desperate. It's the number one felt need. If I could have any gift, miraculous gift today, that'd be my choice. And probably, most likely, would be most of our choices to do that. But God sent his son into this world, and he needed to verify that. He needed to get people's attention, and he did. And in the first century, they had that gift. I don't know of anybody that has that gift today. I'll tell you this, I'm willing to be persuaded. And I have talk to people who claim to have that gift, I'm willing to be persuaded. And to be real honest with you, I can be pretty easily persuaded. We can go to the hospital, and I can be pretty easily persuaded with the evidence. And so, not to be mean-spirited in any way, God does heal today. Let me be plain. I don't want to discourage anyone. God does heal today. And prayer is a catalyst which affects that. James chapter 5 said, any of you sick? And he starts talking about prayer, doesn't he? God does heal in response to prayer. But I find no evidence that he has given the gift of healing to anyone today. And in fact, Jesus did not come to heal the body, but he came to heal sin-sick souls. And he still does that today. And the miracles of the first century are evidence that he's real. And you can put your confidence in Jesus and what he has to say and in his words, in the words of the New Testament. They've been confirmed with miracles. And so today, I empathize. I don't just sympathize. I empathize with sickness of the body. But there's something much, much more serious than that. We're all going to die. But the real question is your soul well? And if it's not, then the great physician stands ready, anxious. He's demonstrated that his primary purpose, his one purpose in coming to this world is to heal the sickness of the soul. And if you're here this morning and your relationship to God, you're separated from God. It's because of the sickness of sin. And the great physician stands ready to heal you while we stand in sin.